Hi, everyone. Welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. Joe McCann and Phil Bush with you. Phil, it wasn't a Marquette basketball weekend, but it still wasn't a bad weekend, I guess, at least for, I would say, a good percentage of fans in the Marquette fan base.
Right. For the 48% that come from a small town of Wisconsin, it was a big weekend with the Packer win and the Wisconsin loss. We're off to a really solid weekend.
To Rutgers, so that at least that got us through the weekend without a otherwise sad weekend with no Marquette basketball. But Marquette gets cranked back up this week. We're going to look ahead to the next couple games, which I think are going to be pretty critical as far as, you know, where Marquette's going to fall as we get into the latter half of Big East play. But let's briefly look back, Phil, at the one game Marquette did play this past week, and that was to Georgetown. Easily the best opponent Marquette has played since the Wisconsin game. And the encouraging thing was Marquette played so well, it was just so disappointing at the end. Coming into the game, I didn't really expect Marquette to win in Washington, D.C. against Georgetown, but they came so close and just had so many unfortunate possessions there towards the end. It was just a little more frustrating than I anticipated being with that loss.
Yeah, the thing was the game showed both their potential and what kind of is plaguing this team. I mean, the team was able to go into Georgetown and hang with them and look pretty good at times. But also the inexperience and the inability to close out a game. We saw it with DePaul certainly and with this Georgetown game. They just couldn't get over the hump. They'd get within 2 or 3 points and next thing you know, Georgetown would go on a mini run. So it kind of shows both the promise and the frustration that a team like this with so little experience is going to have.
Yeah, I mean, it was another kind of tough day for the guards, really, for Marquette. I mean, Carlino hit a couple threes early, and, you know, he had 16 points on the day, but still he had some tough, really tough possessions and turnovers and just kind of going into the trees, as we've talked about before, without a plan. Dwayne Wilson was relatively quiet, 6 points. Derek Wilson was, you know, his solid self. You know, he had 5 points in the game, but I guess the production from the guard spot continues to be a little troubling. And you know, that's what, you know, Marquette's going to need production from some of those guys if they're going to, you know, get some quality wins, some wins they would like to hang their hat on as they kind of go through Big East play here, which is looking more and more daunting as the season goes along.
Yeah, it's really going to come down to the guards because, you know, one of the things that was kind of crazy when you look back at it, you know, Luke Fisher was in foul trouble throughout a fair portion of the game, especially late. But he managed to go six of six from the field and still get 33 minutes in the game. So with as much as he had foul trouble, you know, if that's going to be a typical Luke game, the center and the power forwards between Juan and Steve are relatively covered. It's the guards that are really going to be the engine that drive this. And when you've got, you know, your starting guards going combined 5 for 12 from the field, and Carlino went 2 of 8 from 3, I mean, he is here to shoot the 3 and to hit that 3. And that's the difference, especially when a couple of times Carlino 3s, especially there was one in transition, where Georgetown was able to get out and run in transition as a result and get some easy buckets, and that's just the stuff that can't happen. He's got to either hit those shots or not take those shots.
Like I was saying, you know, late in that game, when it got so close, I finally had myself you know, believing like, oh man, maybe Marquette could pull out a win and actually win this thing. And then they had it was late in the game, they were up 5 and it was kind of almost done at that point, but they got a steal and you're like, oh well, they're down 5 with like 20 seconds left. Carlino got a steal, and instead of, like, I kind of wanted to like step back and take a 3 at that point, even though he had been shooting poorly, but then he just goes right to the basket and turns the ball over, and then it's like, well, all right, well, now it's done.
Right Well, that was the play where Carlino kind of harassed Smith Rivera into turning the ball over, even though he didn't do anything, or it didn't touch the ball, and they had to review it. But yeah, that was the thing where it's like, well, how, you know, that's your golden opportunity, and it was kind of a want moment because you thought, you got excited, you thought it was going to happen, and then all of a sudden, sure enough, you know, it kind of was a turnover and nothing happening at all. But what's interesting is if you go to Cracked Sidewalks, and I don't know if you've seen this, but we put out something, we put out ranking the players based on value add within the top 100. Let's see who published this. I think it was I think it was Pudner, John Pudner put it out, but basically saying that per value add, Matt Carlino is the best value on the team, which is interesting given how generally everyone seems to feel about what he's been doing in games.
Huh. It's one of those things where the numbers and my eyes just don't agree.
Right.
I mean, per value add, so he brings more to the team than Fisher? Is that what it's saying?
That's what it's saying. Now it's that's where the numbers are probably off because Fisher doesn't have a full season in. But right. per so this is value add, including all the players in the conference, or this is all the top 100 players in college basketball that are in the Big East Conference. Carlino is 15th overall. Juan Anderson is 23rd overall. Dwayne Wilson 39. Luke Fisher is 42. Derek Wilson is 43. Juwan Johnson is 50. Sandy Cohen 54 and Steve Taylor 59. I think the surprising thing to me is that Matt Carlino is so high, and that Dwayne Wilson, who we talked about being in a slump, is significantly higher per statistics than Juwan Johnson.
How much I wonder is that buoyed by that outlier from the
of the 30-point game
for Carlino and
yeah,
they've each had a 30-point game. I'm just curious how much those outliers, like if you take those out, because, you know, Carlino, that 38-point game was great, but I think it set an expectation for all of us, like, gosh, I hope he can do that again, or at least have, like, a, you know, another game where he nails five or six threes and is in the, you know, in the 20s, and he really hasn't had a game like that since then.
Yeah, well, and the thing with Carlino is, he does exactly what, it's not like I agree with you that the 38-point game was kind of an outlier, but I don't think he's better or worse than anything that he was advertised as.
No.
He's exactly what we were getting from BYU, and you have to look at it from the perspective of without Carlino, this team is seven players with almost no real big game.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'd rather have him than not have him. I just wish his shooting percentage was a little better. I guess you could say that for the entire team, really. Like all the guards, especially Luke Fisher's shooting percentage is incredible. But that's the thing where if you're Wojo, like what do you say? Make more shots. I guess it's about shot selection at that point, and not that the shot selection has been all that bad. Just seems like sometimes they're just not falling. And sometimes maybe they take more threes than I think you would prefer them to take. But, for the most part, that's the thing that's so frustrating about that Georgetown game. I thought the game plan was really, really good, and they executed it really, really well, especially defensively. I thought they played about as well as they possibly could. They just, they just didn't have the horses, I guess, to make enough shots to beat a team like Georgetown. Like, that's the deflating thing for me. It's like, man, they played really well, and they still just couldn't break through there.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things is you got to look at some of the things like Juwan Johnson. He was 0-for-3 from three. I think he was 0-for-4 the game before. It is about on the offensive end. Some of it is about just shot selection and doing the things that you can do without trying to force the things that you can't. Which may sound like a ridiculous kind of cliche statement, but that's you got to play within. I mean, that's what Fisher does. Fisher plays within himself. He doesn't try and take over games. He hits shots that he should hit, and he passes out of double teams. And that's really all you can ask him to do. And I think maybe Dwayne and Juwan and Carlino, which is kind of unexpected given that he's a veteran, are pushing a little bit. They're trying to do some things that maybe they just really aren't in a position.
You kind of look forward to this team, Phil. When we were going through this kind of the frustration of last year, every week on this podcast, we'd kind of be throwing out different ideas to try, different things to do. It's like, why don't you play, play John Dawson more, or why don't you start Todd Mayo, or something like that. And, going forward with this team, I really don't have any great strategic suggestions as far as to, you know, greater
hit more baskets.
Yeah, yeah. Score more than the other team is all I really have to throw out, because I think Wojo is actually doing a really good job with this team and working with what he has. And the whole team is doing, I guess, a good job working within or doing as much as they can within their own limitations. There's just not, like, the team doesn't have a real alpha dog, especially on the perimeter, to go to when they really need a shot. That's what I was kind of thinking late in that game against Georgetown. It's like, who do I want to shoot this thing?
Right.
You know, who do you want to take these big shots late in the game? And I really didn't have a good answer, because I think ideally late in the game, you would just want to try to get it into Fisher and let him go to work. But if you need, you know, if you're down, you know, 3, 4, 5 points and maybe you need an outside shot, there's just not a guy. I'm just saying that's the guy you got to get the ball to, and I need him shooting it. There's just – and I remember late in that game, you know, Derek Wilson wasn't in the game. Not that I disagreed with it, but there was part of me that thought maybe having – the way some of the other guys are shooting, maybe having Derek Wilson in wouldn't be such a bad thing, because he can get to the basket.
Right. Yeah, and can be aggressive and can kind of steady up and be somewhat of a steadying influence there. But you're right. We don't have a player that we say, this is a go-to, we have to get a bucket, this is who we're going to go to. And that's part of the, you know, to be honest, I wasn't devastated by the loss. I wasn't necessarily expecting a win, so it was kind of a pleasant surprise when we were really competitive at the end. But this is part of kind of the mantra I keep going with, the respect the process, because, you know, we're going to have to respect, you know, that we're going to have to discover who the players are that kind of mature out of this and become the go-to player. Because off the top of my head, in all honesty, if I was looking for a go-to scoring player, Luke Fisher, I think, is probably ideal. But more than any other player, I'd probably say Juan Anderson has been the most steady and consistent, and maybe you'd want him to be the scorer. He can score inside and he can score outside, but that helps you this season. That doesn't help you next season.
Yeah.
You know, so you...
I guess we're all just hoping Henry Ellenson is just going to be the guy next year.
Right.
And that would help the team, you know, take a big step forward. But I guess that's for next year, as far as that doesn't help him much this year. But... But going back to your point on Juan, you know, I guess his leadership has been so good, and his all-around game has been this year. I wouldn't mind seeing him trying to maybe take over a game as a bit of an extreme, but just to be a more assertive, I guess, and not, you know, get the ball in his hands and try to take a big shot here and there, because, you know, who else are you going to go to? Especially if Fisher's constantly double-teamed, which teams are definitely starting to do that more and more. Say, look, let's just harass Fisher and just try to make somebody else beat us. And to this point, I think that's kind of worked for Marquette's opponents.
Right. Well, and I mean, the only thing I would say about Juan Anderson's game right now that I wish he could cut down on the turnovers. He had another 4 turnovers in the Georgetown game, and I wish he could kind of get that. But that's, you kind of take that with the. With the rest of his game. I mean, he plays a pretty aggressive game, and he's going to get some of that. But, I mean, looking on the season right now, I'm just looking up his stats. He's averaging 32 minutes a game for the season. His field goal percentage is 55% from three. From three, he's averaging 53%.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's not like it's a high, something like 8 out of 19 or something like
that. It's 10 out of 19. 10 out of 19.
Yeah, 10 out of 19, that would make sense. So it's not like, it's a small right. sample size, but it's not microscopic. You know, it's not like 2 for 3 or something. You know, he's
right. It's
shot a little bit.
It's enough where you say, it might be worth taking a few more.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and I mean, his free throws is his weak spot, but I mean, he's averaging, you know, 6.5 boards, 11.3 points a game. He's the third leading scorer on the team. I mean, you might want to say, hey, Juan, be that guy for this year.
Might not. It's his senior year. It's his last run. Might as well go out strong. And the thing is, he is getting the lion's share of the minutes next to Fisher for the most part. And I think Fisher's been great for Juan, you know, because all the double teams have kind of freed Juan up a little bit. So maybe
which is kind of to go back to it, is the whole Deontay Burton thing where it's water under the bridge now, but I think Deontay Burton would have had the same kind of opportunities had he stuck around for Luke Fisher.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that completely, but yeah, so that's too far gone, so can't cry over it now. But hopefully someone does step up, whether it's Juan or some of the guards in these next few games. Because the thing is, as you know, quiet as it's been offensively for the most part for Marquette, and maybe, I don't know, frustrating is too strong a word, but it's only three games into Big East play, so we got 15 to go. So hopefully, and you would think there are going to be some games here along the way where some of these guys do break out. And, you know, I don't know if we'll see any 38-point games over the next 15, but maybe we do see some guys like Carlino or Dwayne Wilson or Juan Anderson break out with a 20-point game here or there and really compliment Luke Fisher, and maybe Marquette does steal a win that they're not supposed to. Because, you know, Phil, for me, looking at the, say, next eight games for Marquette, eight, nine games, it's tough for me to find too many wins, to be honest with you. Just because if you look at the RPI, not that the RPI is the gospel, but it is kind of a good indicator of where everyone is. You know, there is a big gap between the top seven and the bottom three. The top seven, you know, Villanova, Seton Hall, Providence, Butler, St. John's, Georgetown, Xavier, in that order as far as the RPI, and Knicks. And then you go all the way down to Marquette at 95. And then there's Creighton and former conference leader DePaul. That was the other good thing that happened this week, is the universe is now, you know, back in harmony.
Reorienting itself.
That, Villanova stopped this. I know people kind of, I wouldn't say freaked out, but people just kind of chuckled this week when Lunardi put out his bracket projections and had DePaul in the tournament, just because his rules of his S-curve say the conference leader has to get the automatic bid. So the Big East automatic bid went to DePaul, and the Big East's bid was like 59 on his S-curve or something like that. But just that was just his rules. Not that he actually thought DePaul was a tournament team, but it's just so funny that in that projection there were eight out of the Big East's 10 teams in the field. But
that's just insane.
But, you know, again, that was just a one-time thing, and it won't be that way when he releases his next one this week. But still, it's looking like right now, you know, the Big East has a good shot to get seven in. But I'm getting off topic. Back to my original point is, over the next few games, Marquette plays just about, except for Creighton this coming Wednesday, it's all those teams that are in that top seven, whether it's, you know, some are home, some are at road. But, you know, Marquette's probably going to be an underdog in all of those games. And so, and hopefully they can get more than two wins. But for me, Phil, I'm just a little concerned that Marquette could hit a rough patch, not for lack of effort, but just I think the schedule coming up is just really going to be really, really challenging.
Yeah, absolutely. The schedule, I mean, the schedule is probably, this is probably the meat of the schedule coming up for the next 3 weeks, and see what happens. You know, and it's kind of interesting. You know, they lost to Georgetown on the road, and maybe could have won that. They should have beaten DePaul, but kind of choked that one away. And beat Providence, who is one of the four co-leaders for the conference. So, you know, Marquette is a couple of possessions away from being, you know, 3-0 potentially. But if you want to be super optimistic, I don't believe that to be true. But, I mean, it's there. The question is, are they going to be able to pull these games out? They've got the talent. I guess what I'm trying to say is they've got talent to stick with teams. It's going to be a question of whether they can close those teams out.
Yeah, and you know, I forget who was running the Crack Sidewalks Twitter earlier this week, but they did point that out. On the optimist side, Marquette was a couple possessions away from being 3-0 in the league, and you know, right. it would have been Marquette that, you know, Lunardi and everyone were talking about. Hey, they're leading the Big East right now. We could have chuckled about it, but I always go back to what Bill Parcells would always say: "You are what you are. You can make excuses, say you were close here, you were close there. But your record is what it is because you let those possessions slip away, and they didn't happen." So Marquette, they are what they are right now. They are 1-2 in the conference. They are a 9-6 team at the moment. Now, hopefully that changes a little this week, and that's why I think this Creighton game is just so important for Marquette's confidence, because it's at home against the team that is currently dead last in the conference, 0-4. They're 9-8 overall, a team that you would hope Marquette will be favored to defeat. And Marquette should have a little more talent than I would hope at this point. So it's just important confidence-wise just to get a nice, not I'll say a nice win, but just get a win at home, get back to 500 in the conference, and then just gather yourself before you really have to, you know, strap in and go toward a real tough stretch in conference play.
Right. Well, and based on what I was seeing online, it looks like Creighton's coming in with some injury potential as well. Austin Chapman went out of the game against Seton Hall with a possible concussion, so you don't know if he's going to be available. Mm-hmm. Isaiah Zerden went out with a right knee injury. Who knows if he's back? Zach Hansen. So the whole point is, if ever there was a game that Marquette should win, it's Creighton or DePaul at home.
Yes.
And if Creighton is coming in injury riddled from an already, you know, 0-4 team, this is the game you would expect them to win. And it kind of maybe gets their mind right, and maybe they can go into Xavier and pull an upset. It's not like Xavier's looked world beating either. I mean, they lost to DePaul, so did we. You know, I think the middle to the bottom, you could make the argument that DePaul potentially could win any of the, or excuse me, that Marquette could win any of those games. They could also lose those games. So that's
yeah,
where you really gotta win something.
Yeah, that's the thing. You've got to beat these teams that are, you know, kind of projected to finish in the bottom three or four in the conference, because if you lose those, then you're in danger of finishing dead last in the conference. And that, you know, right. I think that would be the one scenario where Marquette fans would be truly, truly disappointed in the season. It would be a last place finish.
Right.
And I don't think they're going to finish in last. Despite their hot start, I still think that'll be DePaul before it's all said and done. But
I agree.
You know,
well, I think, well, it's going to be a race between DePaul and Creighton.
Yeah, Creighton. And incredibly to me, St. John's is still winless in the conference as we're recording this podcast. But to me, that St. John's has too much talent to be winless in the Big East. But we'll see. Marquette will get to see them next week. We'll be talking about that one probably on our next podcast. But this Creighton game is just one you have to win, both for confidence and because the opportunities for wins will suddenly look so much more daunting and few and far between if you're sitting at 1-3 about to go on a back-to-back road trip going to Xavier and then going to St. John's, because then, you know, you're getting a little, well, man, we could all go from 1-2 to 1-5 in a blink of an eye, and then we got Georgetown coming in, and then we got Seton Hall. So, you know, the hits will keep on coming in the Big East, but despite some of the frustrations with the DePaul and Georgetown losses, I still, you know, to your point, Phil, earlier about being so close, they're not that far off, even though RPI-wise and, you know, perception-wise, there's a huge gap between the top seven and the bottom three in the Big East. Marquette's been right there in those games, and they should be able to be competitive and get a nice home win against Creighton before they hit the road for Xavier.
So would you argue that the Georgetown game in a weird way has given you a little bit of confidence going in the next couple of games, or no? Is it too much to say that?
It's given me confidence going into the Creighton game. On the plus side from the Georgetown game, I would say, yes, this team can execute defensively, and this team has one go-to player in Luke Fisher. But I'm still – the inability to finish against Georgetown, or, you know, the inability to kind of complete that comeback or hit the big shots, still makes me a little pessimistic that Marquette can get the big win, you know, to go on the road and beat Xavier or go to New York and beat St. John's, or, you know – we'll see how they do against Georgetown when, you know, Georgetown comes to the Bradley Center. But I guess to answer your question, I'm confident that Marquette is not going to, like, hit rock bottom and finish 10th, but I am still pessimistic that they could be, a strong middle-of-the-road Big East team that could finish, you know, 4th, 5th, or 6th. You know, I stop short of saying that. I still think Marquette is kind of headed towards that first day of the Big East tournament where they'll be, you know, 7th, 8th, or 9th in the conference, and, you know, then they would have to win 4 games in 4 days. The thing is, not that playing on the first day would be the biggest embarrassment as opposed to maybe in some years it would, because of those top 7 in the conference in the RPI that are – somebody's going to have to finish 7th. They can't all be 6th. So there's going to be – there might be a team with a top 40 RPI that is playing on the first day of the Big East tournament.
Right. Yeah, it's not bad. Well, and I wouldn't say that that Georgetown has given me a weird confidence, but I will say this. The timing, I mean, they've shown enough that I think they're – it's going to sound weird, but Marquette's a legitimately decent team. who, again, it reconfirms for me that they're going to win some games they shouldn't. They might lose some games they should, or that they shouldn't as well. But I think that with Creighton coming in, potentially with some injuries, it'll be a weird confidence game where, assuming Marquette handles its business, maybe you get, you know, get a few players, Dwayne Wilson, a few others on track, and feeling confident in their game. And maybe that kind of serves as a springboard to go into Xavier and play Xavier. Like I said, I think Xavier is capable of losing just as much as we are. And if you win at Xavier, then you're going into a struggling St. John's. And who knows? I mean, you string, you know, you win two out of three of those, and then all of a sudden when you're coming back looking at Georgetown at home, you know, it doesn't look quite as daunting.
Yeah, you know, momentum can be a funny thing, you know, and it can turn around very quickly. You know, you put together a little three-game winning streak, all of a sudden the perception totally changes as far as optimism and confidence and, like, okay, maybe we can actually beat some of these, you know, middle-of-the-pack teams in the Big East, and maybe Marquette can be there. So I guess, you know, we could, if Marquette gets two wins this week, we could be recording our next podcast with a whole new optimism that Marquette, you know, I don't think we'll ever get to the point that we're optimistic about a top-three finish or anything, but I think, you know, if Marquette puts out a similar effort as they did to Georgetown, against Georgetown, but just make a few more shots from the perimeter, or just make a few more decisions at the guard spot, and just get, you know, just increase that effective field goal percentage, which is so important to efficiency. If you can increase that, decrease the turnovers, yeah, that changes your perception, and then maybe finishing fifth or sixth or seventh isn't so crazy.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And it's got to start with one win somewhere, a good win that you can feel strong about. So, I mean, I do think they're gonna beat Creighton, and I think they're gonna beat them by double digits. In all honesty,
that would be nice. It would just be nice to have a comfortable Big East win. That's probably asking way too much. I don't care if they win, you know, by one in three overtimes. I would take it. Just give me a Big East win. Let's get back to 500, and then we'll just, you know, regroup, and then we'll start with that big road trip to Xavier, which I think will be a great indicator as to what the future holds, and then we'll see what where St. John's is. If St. John's has it together, or if the bottom totally falls out of St. John's and they're 0-5 coming into that game, we might have to look at St. John's a lot different. Maybe I'm still too optimistic about St. John's. Maybe I should have given up on them already, but I still think that's a decent team that should make the tournament. But you know, we'll see.
Yeah, I agree. St. John's will be a challenge. I mean, I don't think their talent reflects their conference position right now, but it's definitely a challenging thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, kind of a brief podcast today. Not too terribly much to talk about. I guess maybe a couple other notes I'll just close with before we get out of here. For those who missed it, John Dawson, for those who care, I guess, John Dawson is transferring to Liberty. He announced that this week on Twitter. I guess probably a Buzz Williams, Dale Lair connection there probably happened.
Right, probably. Yeah. I'm sure he made a phone call or two.
Yeah, I'm sure there's, you know, that relationship probably helped him land there. So, hey, it didn't work out for John at Marquette, but, you know, good luck to him down there. Although, you know, watching these past couple games, I do kind of wonder if John Dawson could have cracked the lineup if, you know, with the way the guards could have been struggling. But, you know, that's, like you said, water under the bridge. So that's nothing to worry about.
I don't know. I mean, you got to look at it from, you had two head coaches evaluate him as a player, and then all of Division One had a chance to pick up his services, and he ended up at Liberty. Nothing against John Dawson; seems like a nice guy. Seems like he'll be a player for Liberty, and probably get max minutes there. But you know, I'm not going to hold my breath for someone that, you know, was kind of just riding the bench for two different coaches and then ends up at Liberty.
Yep.
You know, I don't know. Could be a whole DJ Newbill situation. Who knows, where you just totally miss the boat and misevaluate the talent. But
yeah, maybe he gets Liberty the tournament in a couple years, but we'll see. So that's where he ended up, and there was no news of any transfers coming into Marquette. I think we already mentioned in the last one that Akoya Gao picked Georgetown. So and I haven't seen any news, and with classes do start this coming week, correct? So
correct.
I would think anyone who is going to transfer to Marquette would have done so already. So I guess we'll see what Steve Wojciechowski is going to do with those last three scholarships, probably in the spring, probably surf the graduate transfer wire at that point, and, you know, try to figure out what he wants to add to this team, and I'm sure he's still going to be evaluating, you know, incoming freshmen. I wouldn't anticipating him adding three more freshmen to the four he already has. But I'm sure, you know, if there's somebody out there he likes, thinks it'll help the team, you know, why not?
Yeah, I think it might be at most it'd be one more freshman. I think it's going to be JUCO and or a graduate school transfer. So we'll see what comes of it.
Yeah. So we'll keep an eye on that, but there have really been no reports of any new Marquette offers or interests or any pending commitments. So H. Strong, that's who we're going with. Those are the guys we're going to ride for the rest of the season. So as always, thanks for listening, everyone. I'm Joe McCann. He's Phil Bush. Hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is M-O-O-O-F 23. Crack Sidewalks is the team Twitter page. You can find us on cracksidewalks.com. That's where we post the podcast, and you can leave your comments there. You can download us on iTunes, and you can always check us out on our Facebook page. Like us over there. That's where we post the podcast. Phil, let's beat Creighton and go Pack go.
Absolutely. I was going to say we can offend half our listenership and say go Pack go. Big win.
Yeah. I watched that game not really as a neutral observer, because I'm even though I live in Dallas, I'm not a Cowboys fan at all. So, and I realized I didn't want to pump up the Pack too much, because I realized it's kind of divided, Pack and Bears, and then there's that 2% that's like me, that's a mutt from somewhere else. But
right.
Overall, despite no Marquette basketball, it was a pretty decent weekend, and hopefully this week is much better for Marquette. Until next time, seashells and balloons, everyone.